Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast. Interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 149. Maureen Wilson, you are running for re-election as city councilor in Ward 1. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you, Joey. Pleasure to be here.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a resident of Ward 1. I am a mother of three wonderful children, and I am the partner in life and love with Terry Cook. I am a graduate of McMaster, Queen's University, and the University of Toronto. I am a miner's daughter and immigrants from Belfast, and I have two wonderful brothers.
Why are you running?
Because I think we have to do the work to restore trust, confidence, and civility between citizens and their local government. And I believe I have served in such a way that understands the importance of this. And in its absence, it's very difficult for government at any level to do important things that are necessary and that uphold the public trust. When I ran for office in 2018, too many Ward 1 residents asked me why I wanted to go down to City Hall. They saw it as a hostile place. And honestly, after the last 4 years, I think they weren't wrong. I've witnessed residents either in their service on the city's advisory committees or in delegating to committee of council to be treated with hostility and contempt, and I don't think that's acceptable, and I think it's not in the interest of the city and its future to continue that.
Do you live in Ward 1, yes or no?
Yes.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
Yes. I think you need to live in the community to understand the subtleties that contribute to or detract from its quality of life. Which parks are well used and why? Who do you see in that park? But just as importantly, who is missing and why local businesses are prosperous and which locations seem to have a high turnover, and ask yourself why, and then consider what is the role of municipal government in addressing these issues to try and make things better.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
Well, for the last 4 years, I've had the honor and privilege of serving the residents of Ward 1, and I've tried my best to be responsive, respectful, and inclusive in my actions, and accountable for the decisions that I have made and why I made them. I've also worked as a public employee at the municipal level of government in Hamilton. I led two restructuring initiatives in Ontario, one in Hamilton that was unique in that it was citizen-led. And at its conclusion, it was awarded the International City Manager's Prize for Public Participation. I was the first female chief of staff to the mayor of the newly amalgamated city of Hamilton. I was also one of the principals of a grassroots initiative called the Useful Knowledge Society, which hosted free public events on city topics, everything from the downtown secondary plan to the cost of sprawl and how it's financed, to the design of cities in terms of do they work for women. And finally, and most importantly, I'm a resident. I'm a neighbor. I'm a mother living in Hamilton, trying to do what I can to make Hamilton a city that works better for more people and offers opportunities for the next generation of Hamiltonians like my kids.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 1 and two of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
For Ward 1, I would say making our streets safer for all users. When streets are designed to serve the interests of only motorists, we rob the city of wealth, better health, choice, and better environmental outcomes. And when streets are safer for our children and the aged, they are safer for everyone, including motorists, driving to work and returning home to their family and friends. I will continue to highlight the importance of our shared public spaces to make them places. COVID-19 restrictions reveal the value of public space and outdoor amenities for our health and well-being. And with the closure of private amenities, more people noticed the absence of public washrooms and how they miss joining their children or grandchildren at the park and seeing their neighbors. And on this front, I have been doing the work to get public field houses in Ward 1 ready for universal accessible washrooms, and those will be installed. I have intentionally worked with Ward 1 residents to prioritize the investment in new playground equipment at Churchill and Beulah, Alexander Park, new accessible equipment at Victoria Park, new spray pads. All of these are intentional because they are an intentional investment in people and in neighborhoods. And for the city of as a whole, it's very challenging to narrow the scope to two. I would certainly include climate readiness, because, and starting with that, is the decision on a firm urban boundary, because that drives our energy costs, and how we design our city really matters to climate. And secondly, leveraging the biggest public investment in Hamilton's modern history to make sure broad community benefits are realized for every part of our city with LRT, including affordable housing.
What are three skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 1 on Hamilton City Council?
The first would be experience. I have a unique and intricate knowledge of local government from both a staff and an elected official perspective that I don't think any other Ward 1 candidate brings to the table and few other existing councillors enjoy. I've worked in senior positions within local government, including the past Hamilton-Wentworth regional government, and I have sat around also the elected table for the past 4 years. Secondly, my practical experience as a municipal staff member and elected councillor is further supported by my academic training in urban planning, finance, and political studies. I have an MA in planning and an MA in political studies. And thirdly, I would say that I bring the experience of a parent of three kids to the table. And this has informed my view of how this city works and how it doesn't work for our most vulnerable members. And now that my children are growing, I'm also thinking about what they are looking to and they need in a place to work and to live as young adults.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. Let's presume you are reelected. During this last term of council, transparency has been a major issue. And when you were first elected in 2018, one of those issues was the Coots Paradise cover-up. You initially voted to keep that confidential before you began voting against making that confidential. You and two of the other new councillors voted against continuing the cover-up. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council declares confidential. With all of this in mind, what principles and advice will help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
My consideration and actions will be guided by a number of things. I must consider the parameters of the Ontario Municipal Act. I will listen to the legal and professional advice offered, but on balance, I will continue to be guided by consideration of what is in the public interest, particularly on matters of public health and safety. I'd like to talk for a minute about Coots because you've raised it, if I can. Yes, the newly elected members of council voted with their longer-serving colleagues to receive the information as presented in January of 2019, 1 month after inauguration, and to keep it confidential, it was the first time being briefed on this matter. But as you stated, it takes a majority of council members to determine whether a matter will be kept confidential. I was the loudest and the most persistent voice following that shell shock of a first briefing to demand that the public be told about the volume and the duration of the spill, to which I was threatened with censure, to which I was advised that the information was kept confidential to date, so what would be the point of releasing it now, and to which I heard the potential litigation cost of doing so would be too great. After that first January briefing, I did what I always do when presented with a problem. I do my homework. I toured the Woodward treatment plant. I went down into the bottom of the Main and King CSO tank where one of the gates had malfunctioned. I met with the Hamilton Conservation Authority. I met with various others involved in the health of our urban waterways and Coots, including the head of natural lands at the RBG. These interviews cemented my view that the public needed to know what had happened and for how long, and we needed to get on with assessing the impacts and doing the remediation. I tried my best to convince the majority of my colleagues that the public had a right to know and that keeping it from the public could severely damage public trust and confidence in council and in the institution of Hamilton City government. And it was frustrating our responsibility to address the damage of the spill. But I failed to convince them to change course. And once it became clear to me that my arguments were falling on deaf ears, I gave up trying to convince them and just started voting no and doing so consistently. I may not like these rules, but I have to play by the rules because in their absence, there would be no rules, and that's dangerous too. I've filed my own personal FOIs with the Ministry of the Environment in an effort to get some of the information released to the public to no avail. And the fact is that in August of 2018 and in September of 2018, just prior to the 2018 city election, the legal course was set by the majority of the previous council, and that ship sailed. They knew the facts about the volume of the spill and its duration, and the majority sought to keep the facts from the public. It was a decision that was theirs to make, and they made it. Those from the previous council were not prepared to deviate from that course in 2019. And their open hostility towards me during this past term, I think, is further evidence that the public outcry on the cover-up hurt. And they wanted to exact a price, and so be it. Better to swim alone and sleep soundly and be able to look your neighbor in the eye.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall which silenced good people are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the Commission releases its findings and recommendations?
I'll read the final report in its entirety, and then we must accept the findings in their totality. And I've already asked the city manager how she intends to provide a corporate and leadership response to the report once it is issued. And council and the corporation must address all the findings and set out the necessary actions to address the findings.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
I think the biggest lesson we can take from other places is the absolute importance of communication with businesses and residents about the inconveniences, about the status of the work, the schedule of the work, and mitigation plans. My experience on the reconstruction of Lock, for example, has only reinforced this best practice. I held two public meetings at the start of my term on the planned work. We published at least two videos per month, offering residents a status update and what was going to transpire in the next 2 weeks. People were able to watch these videos on their own time and share them. And I think it got to the point where residents were responding to other residents' project questions and work very closely, of course, with the affected BIAs. The communication and the outreach makes it tolerable, but make no mistake, this historic investment will be disruptive to our city, residents and businesses, but it is one that will reap future and forever benefits to the city.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 1 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
Coots Paradise is the most biodiverse microregion in Canada, with about 25% of all plants and animal species per unit area located in Coots. That's pretty amazing.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the type of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are three questions on this topic. The City of Hamilton is updating its outdated residential zoning bylaws. Zoning across Ward 1 does not conform with the provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law. In a 32-page decision issued in January, the Ontario Land Tribunal declared the Ainsleywood-Westdale secondary plan, quote, dated, stating the plan has a, quote, detrimental effect on achieving good planning outcomes as envisioned by provincial policy. Updated zoning, if compliant with the policy statement, will return local control over planning. What is your vision for residential zoning in Ward 1, and how will you achieve it?
My vision for residential zoning in Ward 1 is the same vision I share for most all other parts of the city, to strive for zoning that will allow for gentle density wherever possible, as opposed to considerable massing, and to demand better architectural design and standards and improvements to the abutting public space from developers. Intensification is coming, even if council had chosen the ambitious density scenario over that of a firm urban boundary. All parts of the city must be part of a more financially and environmentally sustainable approach to development and find ways to intelligently intensify.
Large commercial plaza sites are converting into mixed-use mid-rise development. There are applications along Main Street West throughout Ward 1 from the Ancaster border to Queen Street. Presently, there is no city planning policy specific to commercial to mixed-use redevelopment. What is your vision for this type of redevelopment, and how will you achieve that vision?
My understanding is that all of Main Street from Old Highway 2, for example, to Queen is within a secondary plan. There's still some H zones going up the hill to Ancaster, but most is set within C5 or Talk 1 or 2. The majority of lands along Main are zoned for mixed use, medium density, which prioritizes commercial and residential or standalone. And my understanding of the overall intent of the zoning along Main is to encourage residential development while accommodating some commercial. But that type of commercial is limited. For example, if you look east of Pearl, the zoning limits its use to small-scale medical and allows for some retail, but only in existing buildings as a way to encourage the retention of some heritage. A mixed-use neighborhood provides for comfortable pedestrian access to stores, restaurants, and other businesses, commingled with residential areas, reducing the need to rely on cars or have multiple cars. And it encourages social connections, walkability, and active transportation. Achieving this vision will require a reliance on the zoning and to work with neighbors and architects and planners to come to solutions that will provide for development that will integrate with neighborhoods, be architecturally pleasing, and demonstrate good planning. It means ensuring that we have a good transit system, safe streets, and work together to get to a better yes.
There are four LRT stops planned within Ward 1. The provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law, defines the 500 meters surrounding LRT stations as major transit station areas. In short, this is where density will be built. What is your vision for the major transit station areas, and how will you implement that vision?
I was and remain a strong supporter of LRT for many reasons, including the ability it offers to use transit-oriented development to create value that can be captured for city building. As I mentioned previously, my vision is for compact, mixed-use, walkable-friendly development oriented around transit stations with secured, affordable units. Ideally, these transit hubs become a focal point around which neighborhood planning and design is organized. It becomes a centerpiece for the community where people can gather. And these spaces are ringed by day-to-day services and retail outlets so people can combine their transit trip with after-work shopping or childcare pickup. Yes, they have a mobility function, but they're also a way to organize community and community planning. I think it would be a mistake to let the private sector reap all the benefits of these land value gains that are created by public investment. This is, after all, a taxpayer-funded public investment transit system. The private sector should contribute, and they could help fund the community enhancements like streetscape amenities. So transit joint development is a way of capturing the value of the land around the transit stops. It's a way to return some of the benefits that are inferred by public transit investment back to the public sector. Implementing the vision will require a clear and succinct vision, a clear articulation of community benefits, and cooperation among all parties, including Metrolinx. And I'm very pleased that the head of Hamilton's Community Benefit Network now sits on the city's LRT subcommittee, to which I am a member. And also to that end, there is an outstanding report that will be forthcoming in early 2023 regarding a strategy for the acquisition of lands along the LRT corridor and the use of already held public lands for the purpose of delivering future municipal services, including but not limited parks and not-for-profit housing.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 1. Sadly, it took an extreme death toll this year for City Hall to finally consider safety measures on Main Street. What is your overall plan to address road safety? Please provide three detailed specifics.
My first specific is a 3-in-1, which is already underway with direction as per my successful motion passed by this council in May, which is to make immediate changes to Main and King to make them safer for all users, to convert Main from one-way to two-way, and a consultant has already been secured for that and work is already underway. And thirdly, the other part of the motion was that staff update and reassess all the remaining one-way streets in the city of Hamilton using the street conversion framework that's set out in the Transportation Master Plan. And I will be championing the extension of Queen Street conversion as part of that northward from King. The second item would be to just champion and lean into the Complete Street Design Manual and Vision Zero Safe System approach to roadway safety that states that the transportation system must be designed in a way that prevents collisions as much as possible and lessens the impact of collisions when they do happen. Vision Zero focuses on the design of our roads and of our neighborhoods. In so doing, it allows for and encourages the safe movement of all users between neighborhoods. And I would also say, in that regard, continue to lead the way in Ward 1 in offering safe mobility choices. We are the first ward to pilot bike boulevards. Those are going to be installed later this year. They will offer a connected and continuous way in which to connect Ward 1 neighborhoods and to continue to invest in safe street designs, of course, and public transit. I think the third item is related to the second one in that practice good governance, meaning I need to stay in my lane and not politically interfere with the professional practice and advice offered by public servants, including engineers. Elected officials set out priorities, they advocate for outcomes, they point out problems, they signal values, and they use policy to advance their agenda, but they should not be interfering in operational matters, because when you do that, you risk politicizing the public service, and that can be very dangerous, and it can lead to road design that is very dangerous.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply it to being a municipal councillor. One person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for a decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
I think the first step is to be curious and believe there is value in learning from other places and other people, and completely disregard the long-held notion that Hamilton is exceptional and that we can't possibly derive any useful or practical knowledge from other places or other people. I make the point of reading every single city report that is on my agenda, and I try my very best to come to committee and council meetings prepared. I read a lot of books about cities and city building themes, along with academic journals. But I also nerd out and read from public health journals, because that can tell us a lot about city building. But I'm increasingly reading books now about trees and how water systems work. I also walk a lot here at home and whenever I travel. I think it is the best way to understand a place, and if you look to learn, you can tell a lot about the values of a city and who it prioritizes, because there's no neutrality in urban design. I also intentionally connect with people who have held leadership positions in other communities and who have affected positive change, and be relentless in my learning and my outreach. I've formed deep relationships with people who have a particular knowledge of things. I now have a relationship, for example, with Professor Edward Berkeler, who's an analytical chemist at Redeemer University, and he's been taking his students for over a decade now and doing water sample tests at the headwaters of all our urban waterways. When I first took out my daughter to the University of Victoria, I reached out to the mayor of Victoria and said, hey, do you want to get together for a coffee? We did, and it's a relationship that I enjoy from that point on. And I think very importantly, you have to listen to the people in your neighborhoods and ask them questions about what they do and how they do it and what kind of changes would make their lives better, even a little better. And I think that's the role of stewardship. And
what are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
I would end area rating for transit. We can't afford a two-tier urban transit system. And I would use the savings accrued from this to improve transit services. Because until we have a funding system that treats all urban areas equally, we're never going to have a comprehensive transit system. Secondly, I would ask for more value for money audits to be conducted to avoid what we heard from the city's auditor in his review of our roads, for example. His thorough review of our city roads was outstanding, in my opinion, and he asked the question, are Hamiltonians getting value for their money when it comes to how our roads are maintained and constructed, and he was able to decisively answer no. The city lacked quality controls, and there's too much political interference in determining asset management priorities. It's just not cost effective.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
I would put in place a fair stormwater funding mechanism. Stormwater is water from rain and melted snow. It's the water that flows into the drains on your street outside, not the drains inside your house. The storm drains lead to a large and complex network of pipes under the ground that outlet into our creeks and Coots Paradise and Lake Ontario. It costs a lot of money to maintain, but our stormwater system is essential to keep Hamilton healthy and safe. 90% of the pollutants entering Coots, for example, come from stormwater. But we are underfunding and have been underfunding it. We're well below the provincial average. The second change, Hamiltonians are telling us that affordable housing and affordable neighborhoods are a priority. I've been at the doors knocking for well over a month now, and I hear it consistently. So my proposal is to restructure the Hamilton Future Fund to keep it as a revolving loan, but similar to what other jurisdictions are doing, direct those loans to not-for-profit housing providers to enable them to gain the equity necessary to qualify for other potential funding opportunities with the federal and provincial government.
It's 2026. The public record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council? And what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
For myself, focused, constructive, collaborative, and for council, deliberate, truthful, courageous.
This is a question you were not given in advance. I'm going to ask you to listen to an audio clip and let me know how you feel you've done during the past 4 years.
For me, courageous, focused, constructive, and for council, they were courageous.
I think I have served with courage. From the very shortly after being elected, I spoke to the way in which the city manager was to be selected by a group of councillors from the previous council to the exclusion of the new councillors. I have spoken about the importance of trust and confidence, and I think at times it took courage. I have sought to be constructive and work with my colleagues and work with Ward 1 neighbors in doing things that I think collectively matter for our ward and our city. And I have sought to be focused in my work. So I've tried my best because, as I often say, Hamilton is worth our best efforts. I appreciate the sacrifice of public service and those who have served. I'm looking forward to new ideas and fresh perspectives and experiences being brought to the table.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks you wish to share?
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity once again to engage in this important conversation. I think local government is important, and as I jokingly say, it's where all the cool kids should hang out. I encourage every Hamiltonian to vote and be engaged, and I hope that I have earned the trust and confidence of the residents of Ward 1, and it's been a great honor of mine to serve them for the last 4 years. Thank you.
And lastly, how do people find out more about your platform and get in touch with you?
Well, I am knocking on every door, Joey, at least once. So I hope they can find out more about my platform that way. And we are leaving literature behind. So if I miss them, they can find out more that way. But all of the information will be posted on our various platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc., and by email, and they can reach out at ward1wilson.ca.
This has been episode 149 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the Press Club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.